regular meeting. Begin our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. I wonder if our new member from the Salvation Army would lead us.
I would love to.
You're on.
Ready, set, go.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ready, set, go. Okay.
So the agenda today contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as provided by law, no action shall be taken in any item not appearing on the agenda. The Commission encourages public participation. If you wish to speak on any item appearing on the agenda or during general public comments, please complete a speaker request form and turn it in to the clerk prior to the reading of the item. Once we read the item, it'll be past time for submitting speaker slips. I want to keep the meeting flowing. Speakers are given 3 minutes to speak. The clerk will run the timer and announce when your time is up. Comment may also be submitted electronically by emailing response@ocgov.com. Just a few housekeeping items. The meeting is being live streamed, so the whole room is microphoned during the duration of the Commission at Home this meeting. Please be aware of that, as the microphones are in the ceiling, so it will pick up any chatter. I'd also like to welcome two new members to the Commission. Deborah Rose, welcome.
Thank you.
Who is the City Manager of the City of Lake Forest. And now also our South Project Area Representative. And also, we have appointed Nissan Kristen, if I'm saying that name right, to the faith-based representative, who is the CEO of the Salvation Army, Orange County. I've already put you to work. We have more in store for you. Thank you. So, wanted to say congratulations to them both, and thank you for joining on this important effort. I'd also like to thank those who are returning to service for a second term. Sue Parks, who I think is not here today. Paul Wyatt, who is here today, never misses a beat. Jack Tullen. And Scott Stiles. We appreciate you all returning to serve on the Commission and look forward to working with you in the future as we have in the past. Now we'll move on to roll call and ask the clerk to call the roll.
Thank you, Chairman. Please indicate your presence when I call your name. And we'll start with Chairman Doug Chafee.
Present.
Don Wagner.
Here.
James Vanderpool. Scott Stiles.
Here.
Deborah Rose.
Here.
Sue Parks. Robert Dunn. Randy Black. Richard Afable.
Here.
Nissan Kistan.
Here.
Jack Tuan.
Here.
AJ Patella.
Here.
George Searcy.
Here.
Marshall Moncrief. Paul Wyatt.
Here.
Milo Pineman.
Here.
Todd Spitzer.
Here.
Tim Houchin. And Matt Bates. And Chairman, we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We'll now move to our agenda for today, and we'll begin with our discussion items. Madam Clerk, will you please read the first item?
Yes. Item number one under the discussion items is the Office of Care Coordination update, including the Continuum of Care Supplemental to address unsheltered and rural homelessness, the Notice of Funding Opportunity, the Grand Jury Report, and the 2022 Point in Time Count Debrief. And we do have one request for the public to speak under item number one. Tim Johnson.
Please come forward and welcome.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Tim Johnson. I'm a resident here in Santa Ana and a business owner in Irvine. And thank you for having this meeting. It's obviously a very important topic, not only for everyone in this room, but those that are struggling with housing on a daily basis. Specifically, I want to address the grand jury response, and specific to item number, F3, which has to do with coordination and collaboration between the county and the cities of the county. And specifically, I would say that, you know, that you're wholly disagreeing with this item. And when you look at the city that you're sitting in right now, and the city's response, dated August 3rd of 2022, so 2 weeks ago, and their response is the city agrees with this finding. And so this, by itself, shows the bifurcation we have between the county and the cities, and especially the city of Santa Ana, which is probably one of the most impacted cities with regards to homelessness. So the city is saying, we agree that the county and cities need to coordinate more. Your draft right now is saying, we disagree with this. So just like any relationship with anyone, when you have one party think of one side, the other party thinking different, there's a disagreement there. And we need to address that. And so I would hope that you can rejigger the language on this to be able to better work together with your cities, especially since you have an official response from the city of Santa Ana that says that, yeah, we need to do a better job. We need to work together better. The county, the city, we need to work together better. And then further going on to item number R, the South County shelter, which is, I believe, R2, and saying that require further analysis. We've been analyzing this for years. When Mr. Wagner was the mayor of Irvine, we're already studying this. The time to study it is over. If you need a site, there's a site that the county controls on Main Street, right by the airport. It's the parking lot that no one's really parked in 2.5 years. It's county control, county property. I'm just completely blank right now. Paved, formerly it was parking for the airport. And not a single use of that property has happened in 2.5 years. Due to Uber, Lyft, other items going to the airport, I don't think that it's going to change in the future. We have a better use for that. And this might be a good use for that property. And that is, even though it's really close to Santa Ana, it technically is in the South Spa. So I urge you to start making progress on this instead of analyzing it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
And we have no further speakers on this item.
All right. Not only that item, but the other that are part of the agenda are open for discussion. Anything that any commission member would care to say? This is not actually an action item. Well, I see none. It's not something that the commission itself responds to. It's the Board of Supervisors that is responding, and there's a draft in the document, which I think has already been updated. That will be considered this coming Tuesday by the board. Changes can be made if appropriate. So I heard that comment, and we'll keep that in mind when we check on it next Tuesday. Paul.
Are we asking for comments at this point on the response to the grand jury?
there are several items here under this item one that are open for discussion. It is not an action item.
Response to the grand jury.
Yeah, you can. We can discuss it if you like, but this body itself will not be submitting a response.
Understood. Yeah, I just was a little bit confused on the slide up and various things and what item we were actually in the process of discussing at this point.
It's the first item on the agenda. Okay. Any discussion?
So I have a couple of comments on the grand jury report, if I make it. So the first F1 item on it, basically about South County shelter. In and of itself, I'm not, I suspect that there could be a need for a South County shelter or something. I'm not opposed to that. But I'm a little curious about the response put out here, because you know, the grand jury would have had to come to this conclusion based on something, right? And the data, any data I could look at didn't support such a conclusion. So, you know, when I took a look at why that would be an appropriate feedback, when I looked at the unsheltered from our most recent point in time count, we had a 1,113 unsheltered in North Spa, 1,522 unsheltered in Central Spa, and 422 unsheltered in South. So if I'm looking at the biggest problem area, I wouldn't pick the one with the smallest amount of unsheltered to say that's the one you should focus on, just from that data. So I looked at what other data might have been driving their decision, and I looked at how many do we have unsheltered by percentage of population, for example. So in the North Spa, we have, you know, 1/10 of 1% unsheltered. In Central Spa, we have 1/13 of, you know, percent, and in South Spa, we have 0.047. So we have a half to a third of the number per population unsheltered that we have in the other two areas. So that wouldn't have been. So I was curious about that. But in addition to that, the concentration and recommendation on the shelter and spending money on the shelter and where that fits in the priority, as this comes up as in top priority. When I looked at the number of shelter beds in the various portions of the county, and based on, you know, the point in time count and the inflow into those becoming homeless, which would be your shelter, would certainly flowing right would process and through that shelter and out. If you were going to look at how many days we could shelter those inflow people before they had to get onto stable housing, the North County has enough shelter beds to, based on the inflow rate, to take all the 100% of the inflow coming into shelter as a first step and house them for 469 days if you, you know, had an outflow to them. That's 60 to 90 days is the standard. We shouldn't be housing that. The Central has the capability of housing for 382 days, and the South, where you're looking at shelter, we have the capability of 242 days in the South spot. That may be less, but it's still way above what, you know, what you should be sheltering people for, and if you have outflow. What that data tells me is that, you know, we're not using them to get, you know, to get them transitioned into stable housing. We're using them to hold people for very long periods of time, which is really not what shelters are intended for, right? I mean, they don't work well as housing, right? They're made to, as emergency processing or in resolve issues, get them stably housed. I would have thought the grand jury's big push would have been, you need to get more outflow. You need to find out why, what is blocking people where they're in the shelters for such a long period of time, so you're filling shelters up and people are in there for very, very extended periods of time instead of getting them stable and moving them out. There's a couple of reasons. One is just we're not making enough housing available, which we all know is true, and we need to really put some focus on it, you know, in that. And the other is the behavioral health issues that may happen prohibit them from being able to take housing. And we haven't put we need to put more effort on how we resolve the behavioral health issues and do those. But these two things, I think, seem to be so much higher priority in terms of really getting the homeless from the street to stably into a stable housing situation, but this seemed to be, you know, one of those where, while it may be a good thing to do, it wouldn't have looked to be a high priority. And I'm wondering what kind of guidance would have given the grand jury that as the top priority. So I just want to express my concern with that response.
Well, thank you for that. responses to the grand jury are somewhat limited. You don't usually go beyond the topic or the subject that they've brought to you for your comment. I agree there's an issue with flow-through of your shelters. And we'd need less shelter if we had more places to place people. Yesterday, I was pleased to be at a groundbreaking in Placentia, actually, where 65 units of housing is starting up to take care of people that are in shelters or some that are in danger of becoming homeless. It takes time to build that. If you roll back a few years, you wouldn't see that as much housing as you have. I think the comments to the south have been the issue of getting they have to come together. Look at the north, and it's an active group. The cities there actually come together. The two shelters, one in Buena Park and one in Placentia, are joint efforts of some 11 cities, I remember. And we have the marvelous place of the Salvation Army has built in Anaheim. So you have some willingness there to come together. It seems what I've seen is in the south, the cities would rather fight than fight each other sometimes to do something. So I think that's part of where they're coming from, is trying to make that happen. It's got 34 cities, and some work together, and a lot of them don't. And we all need to do a share. And even though they may have fewer homeless, they do at the moment, are they really doing their share, particularly since that's the wealthier part of the county? I think that's where they're coming from. So we can't go too far away from the question they pose. And so it's not really the whole response. It's just simply an answer to what the grand jury has brought up. So
it was just an interesting point. And I think when we get to a couple other bits and pieces in here, I can respond to some of the other ones.
Sure.
Including the coordination effort, right? So but I do think, our new commissioner, Deborah Rose, representing South County Cities, I know sets in on a meeting that was last week about discussing how we work together through My Nameless to try to coordinate that effort. I think when we look at how we coordinate across the county, that's another part of this overall dialogue. And since we're sort of covering this at random, I will make comments on other areas if it's appropriate time to do that. Doug looks like he wants to say something.
Did you want?
It's just a presentation real quickly around these items. Would you like that?
Is it part of another item?
No, it's part of this discussion item.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, perfect. So we're just going to, and since we hit the grand jury piece, that piece of our presentation will be very quick since we've sort of covered that. In our updates, each time we get together, we try to do our best to highlight some of the most prominent things going on in the work at the moment, especially those things we want to communicate out and opportunities. So the first update around the continuum of care special NOFO, I'm going to have my colleague, Sumi Malandi, our director of operations and also oversees the COC, give a brief overview of this special funding opportunity.
Great, thanks so much, Doug, and thank you for having me, Commissioners. So for today's brief update, I wanted to share with you a funding opportunity that's available to the Orange County COC. This is a supplemental to address unsheltered and rural homelessness, known as a funding opportunity. As you guys can imagine, Orange County doesn't qualify for the rural portion of this funding opportunity, so we're simply looking to apply for funding for the unsheltered funding opportunity. The Orange County COC is eligible to apply for approximately $19.9 million in funding for a three-year grant term, so that's roughly a $6.6 million renewal process. Through this funding opportunity, we are able to solicit new projects that will help us better address unsheltered homelessness, and that includes our rapid rehousing programs, our permanent supportive housing programs, as well as some other types of programs that are traditionally not emphasized by the COC. And the goal of that is not only to just help people who are experiencing unsheltered homelessness, but they also have a key emphasis on two additional segments of the population, and that includes people with severe service needs, as well as underserved communities, including people of Black, Indigenous, or people of color, or the LGBTQI community. Eligible applicants mechanisms for this funding opportunity include nonprofits and local government, including public housing authorities. And we wanted to share that the Office of Care Coordination, in partnership with the Orange County COC, has released a local request for proposals to solicit new projects to be able to apply in this funding application. This slide here outlines the timeline that we are looking to complete this information. And I wanted to share that this proposal is currently open and available, and if you guys are interested in applying for it or learning more information, our office is happy to support with that process. There is some upcoming deadlines that are associated with the COC funding opportunity. And then the other part that I wanted to note is that this funding opportunity requires that the COC complete a local plan to address unsheltered homelessness and the needs of people with severe needs or underserved communities. So we're going to be hosting a number of different listening sessions and inviting the public to participate in those to assist us in developing that plan, sharing what are some of the best practices that they're seeing or some of the experiences that they're facing when trying to navigate the homeless service system or accessing available services. So with that in mind, we wanted to share the link where you can find more information, and we'll also follow up with an invitation to participate in those listening sessions for all of you that are interested.
All right. Thank you. So real briefly, as I mentioned, and as we had a discussion, the grand jury this past year, which one of the grand juries convened in Orange County focused on homelessness, the report of... their final report came out at the end of the last fiscal year. The county has 90 days to respond, and our office with the CEO's office is working with the Board of Supervisors on drafting a response, which you see here in the agenda items. The Board of Supervisors will be filing their response on a Board of Supervisors agenda for the August 23rd meeting. Lastly, we wanted to touch on the 2022 point in time count debrief. So this last month, the Office of Care Coordination hosted a point in time count debrief led by Joe Coletti, the CEO of Hub for Urban Initiatives. Joe and his organization not only assist our office with everything that's COC and HUD related, including the point in time count, they also do basically the same work for almost all of the COCs here in Southern California and many of them throughout the state of California. So they're able to give us a really unique perspective of not only what we're doing, but how it compares to other groups. During our two sessions that were attended by many of the commissioners here and many of the COC board members, Joe detailed the requirements that HUD has for a point-in-time count. Our methodology, our data analysis process, and how all of that compares to how other jurisdictions, obviously COCs, conduct their point in time count. The only thing that I'll say is that it's worth noting is Joe provided us with information around the frequency in which jurisdictions do their point-in-time count. So for the most part, nationally, it's an annual process. HUD requires it once every 2 years. But here in California, half the jurisdictions do it every other year. So we're sort of right there in line with other groups doing it. We're not necessarily the outlier statewide. And with that, that concludes my portion of the presentation on this item.
All right. Any further comments on action item one? No, sorry, not action item. Discussion item one. Okay, please go ahead.
So I have on the grand jury report on line three. Basically, the city and county, the county of Orange, the cities within Orange County have been consistent in collaboration. The one our speaker brought up. I agree that we do not have a county laid out plan and collaboration. I think the North County cities have done a reasonably good job of getting together and working through and coming up with a method on their own.
office to work from so that they can coordinate across the various cities in the county. But these are all, and these are all good tools, but we really don't have, a coordinated plan that encompasses the county. And one of the worries I have is when we talk about, the planning areas. I mean, when Susan Price created the planning areas, service planning areas, some time ago, the idea was that all of the services delivered to, for the homeless really couldn't be delivered in Central County at the Civic Center, right? It was not practical to travel that. Those services needed to be distributed across the county, but it wasn't practical to do, a service center in every city and have county staff from, headquartered here to travel to it. And so there was a feeling that the plan should be to how to take those services and equitably distribute them across three sections, and that made it practical for county staff to plan and sort of coalesce a consistent plan of how better to deliver the service closer to the need. And I think that was an admirable goal. Since then, we seem to have forgotten that they're planning tools to better plan the delivery of services, and now we're using them as barricades and barriers to not deliver service consistently. And I think we need to recognize that we need, the services need to be delivered, and we need to get together and collaborate on how best to do it and where. There's been a few proposals, and one was brought up today about where to deliver services in South County. I'll pick on specifically, but it's the same in other areas. There was a feeling when we first tried that Irvine was too far north. It really didn't solve the problem of getting it further to the South County and making the homeless in South County really have access to it. There was a proposal to put it in San Clemente, a service area, and the county staff said it's far too far to travel to make it practical there. And so there needs to be, a central area. Well, the cities themselves, find it difficult without leadership to figure out where you put it, because ultimately nobody's out beating the door down to have it, but it needs to go somewhere in order to have a service center. And basically the feeling was it needed to be along the I-5 corridor that made it practical for travel back and forth to the Civic Center to it and accessible by public transit. So there's a lot of rules that have to go around where to put this. We really do need to get our heads together as, a county and a plan and lay out potential workable areas that then we could then go look for sites in order to really distribute our service the way the planning tools were made to help us distribute it. And I do think that we haven't done that yet, and that's one of those things that we as a commission should give guidance back on what needs to be done to the Board of Supervisors to make progress.
Thank you for that. Any other comments? All right, then that concludes our first item. I'd ask the clerk to read the second agenda item.
Item 2 under the action items is to create an ad hoc committee for the 2023 survey.
All right, let's see. Is there a staff report?
Yeah, so last meeting, 2 months ago, the commission and the chairman had tasked me in the office, my office, to evaluate the ability for us to potentially do a 2023 point in time count, or possibly conduct an alternative survey or count. As we looked into this particular issue, it became apparent that conducting a full point in time count for 2023 would be difficult, specifically due to the significant amount of resources that are required by the county, the city, and its partners, both in funding and in staffing. So, what we are bringing forth today is an alternative that we think is actually going to bring a lot of value to the work that we do here at the Commission and countywide. We'd like to suggest to conduct a survey to gather further data and detail regarding the population that is experiencing homelessness here in Orange County. Specifically doing a deeper survey over the course of the month of January that specifically targets individuals that are experiencing long-term homelessness and or have cycled in and out of our system, to really understand from them what's worked, what hasn't worked, obviously, what resources would they suggest, what changes to our system would they suggest, sort of get a, for lack of better words, almost like a customer survey, to understand how we might be able to continue to better shape our system to increase the access and increase the willingness to access our system. Obviously, that is a rough draft. We are bringing this here to you today. The next steps from our office that we are presenting here would be, we believe our office can work with a consultant to help better facilitate the methodology behind the process, and we'd like to utilize an ad hoc to assist and advise what that survey would look like, how we would operationalize that. So this is why we have this action item here, to create an ad hoc committee. We are not necessarily naming that. We don't need to name that ad hoc committee today. We're just essentially voting on the creation of that.
If I may, I think there is a consensus that we should do some kind of point-in-town survey annually, and not just every other year. The every other year one we've been doing has been accorded to budget requirements, and they had sets of the questions to be asked, and the time, even the day that this happened. And in a way, you need to do that if you want a comparison from one year to the next. But that is not necessarily comprehensive, as we could be for our own informational purposes. But if we do another kind of point-in-time count, we need to design it. And that would be what an ad hoc committee would be tasked with doing, so that we can cover some gaps that are in the HUD survey that we need to do, and bring us better and more information. And that's what this is really all about, just trying to fulfill, at least I heard, and I think staff heard, the need to do an annual survey, get better information. Things change. And that's the point of the ad hoc committee. Any discussion on this item? Do we have any public commenters, Madam Clerk?
We do not have any requests to speak on this item.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Wyatt.
I'm not going to disagree with collecting data. My data-driven view of the world, I guess, in many ways. I do think that with that, the work to be done, we really haven't leveraged the data we're collecting from the point-in-time counts to the degree that we can really leverage and make use of that data and combine it with other sources of data that we have to really understand better our overall services and where gaps are and so forth. In order to really go back and fill in the gaps of the data, we really have to understand and do a job of leveraging the data we have. We haven't tried to pull together the 2019 point-in-time count with a 2022 point-in-time count to look at. We collect data from our HMIS system that we can use in some other sources. As we put that data together and we try to gain some intelligence about how to better provide services, the holes that we would want to fill that we may not have to be practical to fill in the point in time count will stand out. But I do think part of this process has to be to really fully leverage the data that we have on hand as a starting point, and then look at how we fill in gaps to it. So I just wanted to suggest that however this works, the debrief talked about, best practices are using that data, and he gave us a variety of ways that we might leverage the data we have in-house already. That I think we really need to go back and drill down.
Well, what's one of the points of having the pillars is that the pillars can start studying data like that. will say that from my perspective, I know the county is using that data. We know more about the population. We know where some of them are. We're initiating things like mobile services to go to where we now know where the population is. And it's useful not only to the county. This body hasn't particularly used that data. But the county itself, I know our staffing is. And I know Cal Upton, for example, makes use of that data. Because the most, if not all, of the homeless people are in the poverty line. And so I will hear about our mobile medical from Michael Hunt in a little bit. So, but I think part of that is the frequency of the data that you get. Not only can the next survey be inclusive of what we've been doing, or at least the best parts of it, that the ad hoc tells the body it is the best part, but add to it where we see gaps in data. And the ad hoc would be the designer and presenter to this body of a way of another survey. So we have an annual data count, and this body here would review it and make adjustments. Then it has to go up to the Board of Supervisors to authorize it and fund it and that kind of thing. So this is just trying to put what I, at least I've heard from members here, that we should do an annual survey. And that should incorporate some of the data that we already have, yes. And you can work off of that. So, Mr. Tom.
I don't have a problem with creating an ad hoc committee to do this, but I just want a little clarification here, because based on this, it doesn't look like a survey of a census survey, so to speak, right? So it's not really replacing the point in time, because it looks like this is a survey about access to services and service delivery. So it's a little different from the
can
point
be,
in time.
It can
right?
be.
Right? So I guess I just like, are we also doing a count type of survey, or is it just more about service delivery?
I think that's what the ad hoc is going to design for us. Having an account is useful too, but it's also somewhat intensive to do a throw count. I think we have 1,000 people that did the one that just finished, and that's probably more than we'd be able to do. So I think services and how they're delivered and whether that's effective would be something that could be part of it.
I think the service delivery piece, understanding access and any challenges is really important, because I think the point in time count gives you a perspective on what's out there at that moment, but it doesn't really tell us, because if you expand beyond Orange County, it's all over the map in terms of where there's increases and decreases, and I'd like to see correlation between what is it that we're doing here that is really affecting the changes in number and how that correlates. So I think that's really important.
Okay. Yes, I saw the other hand go
Thanks,
on.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just thought I'd just add, I think it's a good idea if we wanted to assemble some folks to assist and advise on this survey. So, for example, among the three city managers that are here, we could probably assist with populating, you know, such an ad hoc committee with some subject matter experts, maybe some of our police officials that are deeply embedded in just working on some of the homeless issues that we have, that would probably be able to give some good input into it. If we're talking about doing it every year, I know we had our police representative that was here, I think from Fullerton Lang, and he talked about the intensiveness of doing this every year. And, you know, it does take a lot of resources, and so, you know, if there's a way to efficiently really focus on it, in addition to all the other people you might want to put on this, I think, the cities themselves could lend some, you know, some folks who would be helpful who are really involved in this.
I appreciate that, and I think the data from the point in time account we have would help us target some of that. So, exactly what the survey should look like, I would think knowledgeable people can give us some ideas, come back, we can agree or disagree with it, and then we can see what the board think of it, because we have to pay for it, staff it, and then we have to go up there anyway. But I think that's a good discussion to have. We will find the services that are maybe lacking out of that, how that all comes together. So, if there, I saw another hand go up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Doug, data is a question, data use, data access, data analytics, system gaps and resource demands are a subject that the Continuum of Care Board have been talking about a lot in our vision ad hoc. And I think we're preparing to have the board adopt a vision that does actually embrace the idea of studying the entire system of care in terms of demand and resource allocation and prioritizing when new resources do come into the system, where should they best, for best effect, where should they be applied? So I just think if the COC is, I was going to save this discussion for the pillars conversation, okay. But if the COC is talking about a data initiative and the commission is talking about a data initiative with all the resources we have here, feels like, and I'm asking you the question, isn't this a prime opportunity for us to combine our resources, especially because the COC, as we just saw in Zalima's presentation, has these resources flow through the system constantly. And I think the concern from the COC board, speaking as a member, is that we're not actually going through a thoughtful prioritization process as the board. The staff have more time to sit and analyze these questions, but the board itself is, like this board, is put in a position of making decisions on the fly with analysis and you know, professional support from the staff. But a combined data analytics system that actually maps out what our, where our blocks are, what the roadmap is to a better reallocation of resources that do flow in, regardless of where they may be, I think, Doug, would be, I don't know what you think, but that this might be an ideal spot to collaborate.
Yeah, I think I failed to mention, and I apologize, this is another opportunity. I know that we at the Commission and we at the COC, those of us that are on both, and realize the importance to partner. The point in time count is a function, a required function of the COC, so it really sits in the COC. So, yes, we would want to make sure that there was partnership here and participation from both groups on that ad hoc to ensure exactly that similar visions that are being worked on both bodies continue to stay on parallel tracks and actually merge closer and closer together.
Well, what is the consensus here? Should we create an ad hoc committee to consider further studying the data and maybe creating some augmentation annually where the every other year point in time count doesn't answer all the questions? Is that okay?
I would move we do that, yes.
Okay. Is there a second?
Just a further clarification, and that would be, as Doug just said, in coordination with the COC board. There would be some element of coordination that would occur, because I think that is vital.
Yeah. Okay. No, I don't want the coordination to take too long, though. We do have a couple people here, because then we'll be into 2024. Too much stuff happening. But no, I think it'll be a good thing to explore. Or I have a motion, and I hear a second somewhere.
Second.
All right. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Chairman, I can call the roll if you'd like, but since none of the commissioners are participating via teleconference, it's
okay,
not required.
We can do this orally.
We can do, yes.
Okay. All right. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any objection? Any nays? Any abstentions? All right. It passes. So we'll be creating an ad hoc committee, and it'll be meeting and studying these things and a smaller group, I think, will be effective. Madam Clerk, would you read item 3?
Yes, item 3 under the action items is to approve the recommendation to submit the Homeless Service System Pillars document to the Board of Supervisors. And we do have one request from the public to speak on this item, Tim Johnson.
Good
Johnson again, resident San Ann, business owner on our own. Mr. Wyatt, I appreciate your thoughts on the throughput, which this the pillars is a huge impact of throughput. I know we have some healthcare professionals in the room. If you can imagine, if all we had was emergency rooms to provide healthcare without that next level of care, and if we focus solely on shelter, that's what we have, to where everyone's going to go to the emergency room for that. Not only triage, which we need, so we do need shelter, but the triage is best at that shelter area. And then just like at the hospital, the medical professionals advise on what the next level of care is needed. And we're missing that next level of care, and so we're not getting that throughput to where we're stuck at the emergency room. So we're providing health care at the emergency room level, the triage level, for months and days, and where the housing portion is a missing element. So we still need emergency rooms, but we need that permanent supportive housing all throughout the county. And otherwise, we're going to continue to have massive backlogs at the shelter level. So we need to, I emphasize for this group, to continue to push for that next level of care. Otherwise, we will continue to run our services for those seeking shelter as an emergency room triage center, trying to fix a long-term issue, of which anyone that's been to a hospital knows you go emergency room, next level of care, and then even next level of care beyond that, which hopefully is permanent housing. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, do we have a staff report?
Yes. So all of the commissioners received the Homeless Service System Pillar Report prior to this meeting for review. As you see in the report, our office compiled the draft of each pillar discussed over the last year into one report. There are not only the agreed upon definitions, goals, best practices, and guiding principles for each of those pillars in this report. We've also added a handful of suggested action items to the next steps. As you see up here, we will, in our agenda, the action item is to recommend the Homeless Service System Pillar document to the Board of Supervisors for policy consideration and adoption. That's one of the steps. Additionally, the Office of Care Coordination will use these, the final draft of this report, to ensure the best practices, principles, and commitments are incorporated into the Office of Care Coordination's issued request for proposals, quality standards, and audits. We'll also, we being the Office of Care Coordination, will also work with the Board of Supervisors if this is implemented to ensure the best practices and guiding principles across the county departments to ensure alignment in program design and service delivery. And then, essentially by this recommendation that's in front of you, we're recommending that the Homeless Service System Pillars report up to the board that the commission endorses the best practices and guiding principles. The commission recommendation is for the best practices and guiding principles to be incorporated across county departments and to ensure consistent service delivery. And then additionally, there's the commission membership will look to incorporate the best practices and guiding principles in their own service delivery to ensure consistency for those experiencing homelessness across Orange County.
This is an action item. We've been working on the pillars now for more than a year. And not only does that include the pillars, but it includes best practices that go with it. To be put into action, it needs to go to the Board of Supervisors for approval. And the idea is, with the pillars, we have definite areas to study, and study can be done more in depth by small groups. Now, small groups can bring their study and recommendations back here for discussion by the whole board. And then, hopefully, we can formulate policy recommendations for the Board of Supervisors to adopt. And that's where we're at. We now have gone through each of the pillars in prior meetings, and along with the best practices. And so it's ready for consideration. You may, if you have a change that you want to make, present it. Or if it's ready just to go forward, then I'd like a motion.
Motion to
Yes, Paul.
That comment on page 8, let me find of the document, section called Low or No Barrier to Entry, talking about shelters. When the as the report's put together, we seem to have, as I read it, try to look at the issues that it raises, combine navigation centers, emergency shelters, I talked about, and transitional housing, that is that housing that says that everybody, the person's ready to be housed, but they're waiting on housing availability, into the word shelter. And when you do that, then sort of you're trying to figure out the rules of how you operate something that's, that actually has three very different purposes. And one, so it confuses us a little bit. So in this case, it's talking about, you know, low or no barrier entry. A nav center, that's absolutely essential. If you can't get there and walk in and start to work on figuring out where services are and how to get access to them, then it doesn't work at all. When you got people who are now stable and waiting to be housed, bringing in people who still are dealing with mental health issues that need to be in the emergency room and intermixing them with, you know, creates a safety and, you know, a problem. So these various parts of what we put together as a shelter are not one thing that totally operates as a unified entity, and it would be very difficult to make these pillars, you know, really function as designed until we sort of break those segments apart a little bit better in this report. I think that's sort of my input on it. Anyway, I think there are very different needs here, and that combining them all doesn't work very well.
I'm not sure it practically combines, but it's creating a pillar that will have a committee, an ad hoc committee, can go into study and can certainly deal with the issue you're talking about. And that's kind of point here is by looking at some of the components of homelessness and having committees that can break that apart, spend the time they need in smaller groupings, they can come back and help us better understand that component and deal with the policy that we would then recommend. So, and things are changing. That's why we have the street medicine coming in. And to me, the clog in the whole system is not having enough housing after shelter. Where do you go when you wind up being in shelter longer than you should be? And if there is more housing after shelter, it can be a flow through and a need for less shelter. It's kind of one follows the other. But what I'd like to do is see if we can put a year's work, move it forward, and see what the board as a whole thinks of it. Any comments, questions, suggestions? Seeing none, I would like to have a motion to approve and move it forward to the Board of Supervisors for consideration.
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All right. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? I hear none.
I'm sorry.
None opposed. Any abstentions? Okay, it carries, and I'd like to thank staff and those who served on the ad hoc committee that spent hours and hours putting this together for the great work they did. And so it creates more structure here. I know when I first became chairman, I kept thinking, why do we have meetings that are missed by people? Why do we miss quorums too often? And what is this committee really about? It didn't seem to me to have as structure to really get into things and study them. And that was why we began with the pillar system. It's the same kind of thing we're doing with our OC CARES, where we're working on criminal justice reform. And that has worked very well. So thank all of you for your attention and review and comments. They're very helpful. Ask the clerk if you would please read the next item.
Item number 4 under the action items is to approve launch of the recruitment process and utilize the existing membership ad hoc committee to evaluate and make recommendations for appointments and or reappointments to the commission to be submitted to the Board of Supervisors for final approval. The expired membership seats that will be included in this recruitment are the business representative, municipal fire department representative, hospital representative, behavioral health representative, and a continuum of care board representative. And we do not have any requests from the public to speak on this item.
Do we have a staff report?
Yeah, just briefly, as we continue to update our membership and our commission seats, we have these last handful of seats that were just announced that have expired. Now, with that being said, as we've discussed before, the bylaws allow for expiring seats to stay on the board, on the commission. There's no violation to that. But we obviously want to continue to recruit for these seats. We plan to follow the same process we used earlier in the year with the first batch of renewal seats by launching this action item, utilizing the existing ad hoc membership. We are looking to get through this process. We'll release a recruitment. We'll keep that open for 3 weeks, the ad hoc. We'll come back to the commission in October with recommendations for the seats that you see here. We will then hopefully bring those recommendations, when approved here by the commission, to the Board of Supervisors on, we're targeting December 6th. Board of Supervisors meeting, so that those members, whether they're existing members or new members, will be attending starting in our December meeting.
Discussion? Anyone?
Mr. Chair, do the bylaws require that we do this recruitment? Because that's a pretty impressive group. Could this body just make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to reappoint?
Yeah, the Board of Supervisors actually does the official appointment. So we're looking for people to appoint. So don't worry.
If they're so inclined to continue serving.
Yeah, yes. I think that would be the likely outcome.
And I'm not speaking for anyone. I'm just not sure every single one has the ability to. It is an impressive list, and I think in an ideal world, we will be coming back in December with all of those, but obviously we will do whatever the commission, you know, we work at the direction of the commission.
Just a thought.
Yeah, we do have some that are conflicted and other things that they need to do that we have lost. I know one other has indicated a conflict that wants to work on our Be Well. It takes a lot of time. So it's a... Right, we have an impressive list because they've done impressive things.
Absolutely.
And we'd like to keep it. All right, may I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Thank you. I'll ask the clerk to read the next item.
Item 5 under the action items is to approve Commission to End Homelessness minutes from the June 15th, 2022 regular meeting. And we do not have any requests from the public to speak on this item.
Any corrections, additions, anyone? See no hands raised. May I have a motion?
Move minutes.
Moved. And is there a second? I'll second that. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none. Abstention? None.
I'd like to abstain as I was on the
committee. Oh, okay. Video. You went there. All right. Two abstentions. The committee members don't wish to pass on something they didn't see.
Thank you.
Okay. The Let's see, now we move on to presentations.
Item 6 under presentations is the CalOptima Homeless Health Initiatives presentation. And we do not have any requests to speak on this item.
Great, thank you. Good to see everyone.
We don't have
thank
a speaker
here for the invitation to be here. I'm going to start with the fact that I'm going to go back one slide if I could. We've recently renamed CalOptima CalOptima Health and updated our logo and our bylaws as well. And I think the importance is we want to convey a sense that we really have to not only do this together in connectivity, and that's part of what the logo stands for, but also to the diversity of the communities we serve, and ultimately we have to deal with the health of the individuals that we're responsible for. Our latest updated report, we now have 924,000 people that are in CalOptima and the Medi-Cal program. That's pretty stunning in a county with 3.2 million folks, so we're now at almost 29% of the county lives below the federal poverty level receiving these benefits. Supporting the homeless population, we estimate based on our data sets, and we have as a health plan an awful lot of data. And so when we run data and data metrics, we're kind of trying to figure out, is this individual homeless or not? And so we estimate based on our data sets, addresses, lack of certain information, where we send mail to pickup centers and so forth, we estimate that CalOptima currently insures about 10,000 folks that are homeless or residing in their automobiles or in vans or in motorhomes. And so we know the problem is bigger than just the point in time count, because we're never going to capture everybody. A lot of us were out on that count, and it serves a very good purpose. So I'm glad to see the coordination around not only the point in time just to get at the homeless issue, but what services do they actually need? One of the things that CalOptima Health wants to do on a go-forward basis is start figuring out what is the major issue in social determinants of health that our members are experiencing that are causing their life condition to be either in a poor state or in need of great health and great support. So we're going to start initiating an annual survey of our 924, hopefully less than a million, folks, what their social determinants are, and can we predict in advance that they're going to go down, that they've got issues coming at them. If they lose the job, we know the apartment is next. If they're eligible for CalFresh but don't sign up, they're going to have a choice between food and rent and so on. You're all well aware of this, and you're all very tuned to it. So we have a very robust team of folks that work on this, and I think one of the things that both frustrates me and encourages me is that there's a tremendous amount of resource all across Orange County. It is extraordinary what's being done. And the question is, can we actually make a dent in things? And second, the other big frustration is so many individuals are in need, but they don't even know that they're eligible for the services that are out there. And so the awareness to those individuals and getting out to them, I think, is critical. So our team's going to talk today about a number of things that we're doing and resources being put into it. But ultimately, if we coordinate and work together, which I believe in strongly, and this commission believes in strongly, I think we can make an impact. I think we can get to it before it happens and start some mitigation in advance. Otherwise, based on our enrollment numbers, we'll be at a million members before the end of this year. We're going to go through redetermination when the public health emergency ends, which means we're going to have to requalify 924 to a million people for CalOptima, and then figure out for those that fall off, how do we create a safety net to get them to the next insurance plan. So at the end of the day, we really appreciate this opportunity as CalOptima Health to have this conversation, and I'll turn it over to staff, Katie Valderas.
Good afternoon, Commission, staff, and community. Thank you for your time and your attention today. CalOptima has done quite a bit related to homelessness over the years, more than I can cover in this brief presentation, but I did want to touch on a few initiatives today, including our street medicine program, the housing and homelessness incentive program, and my colleague will join me to talk about CalAIM. So my name is Katie Valderas. I'm the Director of Population Health Management at CalOptima. My background is not in managed care. Like many of you on this commission, I actually work in the city manager's office. So I'm familiar with the challenges that cities face uniquely. My background is also in public health.
approach this really with a prevention lens. As many of you may know, in 2019, CalOptima allocated $100 million towards increasing access to healthcare and housing for unhoused individuals in Orange County. As of June 2022, we've allocated about $60 million of that fund. Some of these initiatives have invested in BeWellOT, our homeless response team, clinical field team pilot program. We provide COVID-19 vaccine incentives for those who are experiencing homelessness. We have a program that incentivizes mobile clinics to provide healthcare services at shelters and hotspots, and many other different programs related to healthcare access and housing supports. So as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be rolling out a street medicine program. A few months ago, our board of directors at CalOptima allocated $8 million of our homeless health incentive funds for Orange County's first street medicine program. We developed a scope of work in May that was really rooted in trauma-informed care and building upon the lessons learned through our homeless clinic access program and our clinical field teams. And we're planning to work in close collaboration with the county's outreach and engagement teams, BeWell mobile units, as well as other outreach providers. We released a request for qualifications this summer, and that closed on August 15th, and I'm excited to share that we received 8 proposals that we are currently reviewing. We chose a request for qualifications because we know there's not going to be a singular provider. It's going to take a full force of various providers to cover the entire scope of the county. And the goal for us is to launch the program before the end of 2022. We have a really accelerated timeline, and contracting and all of that takes time for us to get through our process. But we're operating with a lens of urgency because we know that this will really impact our members, as well as those who are not our members but also need to be receiving services. I also wanted to share about the Housing and Homelessness Incentive Program. This is a voluntary program that DHCS, the Department of Healthcare Services, has rolled out that enables Medi-Cal managed care plans such as CalOptima Health to earn incentive funds by addressing homelessness and housing insecurity as a major social driver of health. So we are going to be incentivized over the next couple of years to partner with all homeless service providers, including the COC, counties, public health agencies, and other service providers. It seems to only change when I look at it. So as part of this plan, CalOptima will be eligible to receive up to $83.8 million from, this is one-time funds only using the American Rescue Plan Act or ARPA funds. The funds must be earned by March 2024, but they can be spent after March 2024. The funds are intended to support the delivery and coordination of health and housing services for Medi-Cal members by helping us to build capacity, partnerships to connect our members to much-needed housing services. And really focusing on incentivizing managed care plans to take a much stronger and more active role in reducing and preventing homelessness. The target population, for all intents and purposes, is defined by HUD, including the individuals or families who lack nighttime residence, an individual or family who is staying in a place that's not designed for normal habitation, somebody in a shelter or institution that is exiting into homelessness, someone who's about to lose their housing imminently within the next 30 days, unaccompanied youth, as well as individuals fleeing domestic violence. In terms of the timeline, as I mentioned, this is a 2-year program, and this is a pay-for-performance program, so we will be earning our money depending on the measures that we meet, which I'll cover in just a moment. We submitted a letter of intent to DHCS in spring, followed by a local homelessness plan that we presented to the Continuum of Care in June. The local homelessness plan was, for all intents and purposes, more of a baseline. It was this is where we are now, and these are our plans for moving the needle over the next 2 years. So over the next 2 years, we'll be submitting our performance based on the measures and receiving percentages of the $83 million I mentioned earlier. So you can see that the outline and the percentages on this timeline. In terms of the measures, there are basically 3 priority areas. And I'm not going to read through all the measures because there's a lot of them that we're going to be held accountable to, but I am going to highlight the ones in bold, as those are the ones that DHCS has indicated as a priority for us to earn the $83 million. So the first priority area are partnerships and capacity to support referrals for services. So the first priority around this is coordination with our local coordinated entry system. The second is really related to partnerships that will support data sharing agreements between the Managed Care Plan, CalOptima Health, as well as other homeless service providers. The next priority area is related to the infrastructure to coordinate and meet neighbor housing, as well as healthcare needs. So you can see that one of the priority measures here is related to street medicine. Our leadership had street medicine on as part of their priorities prior to us learning that this was also a priority through the HCS. So we're very much in line with this, even before we found out these were the measures. Another priority related to this is our connection with the local homeless management information system, or HMIS. And county staff have been very helpful in helping us navigate that process. Okay. And then finally, the third priority area is the delivery of services and member engagement. So you can see here that what this comes down to is how many members are housing successfully and how many are going to be remaining in housing. Those are some of the priorities that will be measured under for this area. So when we had to pull together our local homelessness plan, we had to really pull through a lot of other plans. There's quite a few of them for homelessness because, as you know, any grant or funding opportunity requires a plan. So we worked to comb through all of those and really try to aggregate what we could learn from them. And this, you know, I see this really validated through the grand jury report, some of the challenges that we also observe, including lack of data integration, data sharing on the service continuum, a lack of program enrollment. So, for example, we have members who we know to be unhoused in CalOptima as part of our membership who may not be in the coordinated entry system for housing, and vice versa. There may be members of our community who are unhoused, but not CalOptima members and not accessing healthcare or the services that you'll learn about related to CalAIM that can help connect them to housing. We know that affordable housing inventory is one of the biggest barriers systemically across the county and throughout Southern California. We also know that resources for community-based organizations and providers are limited and that we have to strategically and significantly increase capacity in certain areas for specific populations. We also know that there's varying capacity levels to really expand the community supports and enhance care management to the necessary scale. So through this, we're drafting a proposed investment plan. This is our next deliverable to DHCS on September 30th. And we've aligned this draft investment plan or initial priorities to align with those measures that DHCS will ultimately hold us accountable to. In the process of developing this, we held a public listening session. As I mentioned, we combed through a lot of those different housing strategic plans. We're presenting to you all. We're presenting to the Continuum of Care Board. We've had lots of conversations with stakeholders across the county. But it really falls into three buckets related to those partnerships and capacity building. So that could include better discharge planning and healthcare navigation for unhoused individuals leaving inpatient and emergency department settings. We want to continue, we know that the point in time count and other methods of data collection are important for developing strategies. So we want to support the COC in that, as well as ensuring that the lived experience of those who have experienced homelessness or are currently homeless are included in strategy design. Of course, we want to connect and better integrate with our homelessness management information system. And then in terms of the infrastructure to meet member housing needs, this could entail landlord incentives to promote the availability of housing. It's really frustrating for many of us to see how many housing vouchers are out there in our community that are not leased up because of, you know, a number of barriers, but making sure that we can make those units available is one strategy that may help. We also want to invest in service hubs to really help strengthen the coordination. We see this starting to happen with many of the navigation centers that help connect people not only to temporary housing, but also other healthcare and other supportive services. In terms of the delivery of services and member engagement, we want to also maintain some flexible funds because we know that there are underrepresented populations for whom investment is needed, including our LGBTQ+ population, family homelessness, transitional age youth, or TAE. We also are going to continue to invest in street medicine as we've already begun down that path. And then I'm encouraged to hear that the county is also going down the path of surveying more members because we really believe that systems as we continue to improve them and strengthen them. So in terms of potential future investments, DHCS has, it is pay for performance. We won't get all the money up front. So the future investments with that $83 million, or up to $83 million, will be fairly flexible based on what DHCS has said. And so we anticipate that that will allow us greater leeway to invest in affordable housing, shelter project gap funding, including flexible funding to reduce barriers to those who are trying to get into housing, as well as those who need to stay in their permanent housing. And then my colleague Kelly will also share about some of our future visions and plans for our recuperative care and PACE, or program of all-inclusive care for the elderly, for unhoused seniors. It worked. It woke up now. In terms of next steps, we are planning to continue to engage stakeholders such as this commission and the COC board and Palo Alto's board of directors on September 1st. And then our investment plan is due to DHCS on September 30th. So I believe that is all I have. But all of this really is focused on continuing along a spectrum that will enhance people's healthcare access and integrate it into housing. So I'll pass it over to Kelly to talk about our Cal-AIM services. And
can we ask a question before she says that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Mr. Chairman, is that okay? Question before
Good.
She
Please,
hands
go ahead.
Up. Is that okay? So if you don't get all the money in a lump sum, how is the Cal-Optimo board deciding what algorithm we're using to decide how much money to put in each program?
That's a good question. I think we're just basing it off of where we see the greatest needs. We have heard a lot from community related to South Orange County being a need. We understand that street medicine is a huge need for us. So I think we're going to be taking a phased approach to this and adjusting as we go. We don't have to promise all of the dollars out the door right off the bat. So I think that will be very helpful. Our board has also given us some initial parameters for how they want the original $100 million to be spent, and so we're following those to the best that we can at this point.
How did they, did they follow the direction of staff? Did they take that advice, or they kind of just spoke it up themselves? How did the board decide to allocate the $100 million?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't have that background. It was, I believe, in 2019 or 2020 that they made that allocation. But I'm happy to share more information if I can find that.
Yeah, I guess in just general, like additional survey work, the work that, you know, Commissioner Trump is doing, it's just like, you got all these pots of money. Mm-hmm. How is it all being prioritized and organized so the Board of Supervisors is doing this with this amount? Like, how is this, what's going to be the clearinghouse, if any, about how we're all prioritizing these buckets of money? What's the grand macro plan for this? Because that is $100 million plus maybe 83. And if they go, you know what? Housing isn't ready. We're going to put it all into street medicine. Okay. Well, what happens if the priority is, like the chairman said, it's not keeping people sheltered. It's permanent supportive housing, right? Well, why wouldn't you put all your money into permanent supportive housing then? I'm not saying I advocate that, but how are we prioritizing this money amongst various agencies, including the private sector, including private nonprofits? How are we all figuring out how we're spending our money?
So, do you mind if I? Yeah, I'm sorry, Chairman. So, I think one of the things is
I want to control Jack's money. That's really the bottom
line. Fair enough. I think that's a really fair question, and I think that's the ultimate challenge there. And I. As you heard Katie speak, and as we've spoken before, you have a handful of major groups or players in here. You have the COC, now you have Cal Optima that's submitting a significant amount of funding. We have this commission that's here. It's one of its functions to help advise up to the board how to move forward. We have been working very closely, and our office, the Office of Care Coordination, staffs the commission, we staff the COC. We've been doing a tremendous amount of work of not only aligning those two groups, but aligning the different departments. SSA gets a significant amount of funding, OCCR. We obviously have the Housing Trust Fund, and then really working with Cal Optima. So we've we've been meeting at different levels. There's the state is asking, sort of interesting, for they asked for a housing strategy or a homelessness strategy, as Katie mentioned, from Cal Optima. They've asked for it from the COC and the county for those that receive PAP and other state funding. So we've been working very closely together to ensure that these plans, as much as they can mirror each other. So I think the commission and our pillars play a role in this. It's obviously what we have in front of us today is a basic framework, and there's a lot to operationalize out of that. But I think the adoption of that to say this is the framework we're working, and now we've got to think about next steps of how do we prioritize, is one way to do that. So there's not one answer specifically on, and there's not one specific meeting where we just get together and look at this. But it is really on the staff side an everyday discussion and ensuring that the right groups get together to do our best job at coordinating these funds coming from many different places.
I would also just share that even with the $100 million that the board initially allocated, it's braided together with about 7 or 8 different streams of funding, each of which have their own restrictions. So we've had to get really clear on what can this money be used for and then identify the needs accordingly. So as Doug said, it's really not a clear path, but I think the collaboration that we've had with the county has been very helpful in us understanding what the priorities are with the allowable uses of our funds.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you said that. That makes perfect sense now that you said it. That wasn't intuitive, at least, because I'm not following the development discussion. But so you have different streams of money that also comprises $100 million that have constraints about how you can spend it.
But you raised a really good question. I'm sorry, I'm the new kid on the block. So,
well, you haven't had given permission yet to speak in this meeting.
Oh, sorry. Chair, do I have permission to speak?
Would you take over the meeting, please?
I'm the new kid on the block, and that's a really good question that was raised in terms of how things are cleared, because it is interesting to know in terms of collaboration and how we can best make the biggest impact. It's a question we've often asked internally as the Salvation Army. And I'm asking it because I'm curious, because it does make a difference to know what are the top priorities and how we're going to move forward. So it is a good question. Maybe a question for later conversation, but it is something that I'm also curious to have some clarity on.
Well, thank you. I think homelessness is a very complex problem that has a comprehensive, if there is a solution, it has to cover all these things at the same time. It has to cover shelter, continue to work on getting more housing beyond that, and then something that we haven't mentioned yet is prevention. In some ways, that's as big a key as anything, keeping people out of homelessness. And it gets back to housing and CalFresh and some other things like that. And so it's quite a pot to start. I saw a hand over there first, and then here.
So I think you're asking the right question. And let's just take the $83 million from the state. Where did that come from? The state set aside $1.3 billion of excess revenues after their budget. And so we could apply for it. The most you could get was 6%, which is $83 million. We received the $83 million. As part of that, the regulatory hook is you can only spend it a certain way for HHIP. And so we now have discussions with DHCS to say, okay, this is housing and homeless. Can we go out and buy a fourplex with this money and start putting people into it? Well, we're not telling you. We just want you to be able to build infrastructure to support housing, to support homeless. Okay, hang on a second. Can I go out and buy a fourplex as Cal Optima with this money that you've granted and allow that for housing? Well, you have to set your program goals and achieve those goals. So it's not clear all the time what the regulatory hook is with the dollar that's received. So we're working to basically box all of those funds up, prioritize where they should go based on that need in the coalition conversations. And we cannot do that in isolation. So we have an ad hoc committee of the board of directors at Cal Optima just for strategic priorities. and then we have our internal teams. So the board doesn't come to us and say, we want you to spend the $83 million this way. We receive the grant information from the state. The state sets out the rules. Staff dissects those rules. And then we propose the priorities, and then the board says yes or no. So that's kind of how that bucket works currently. And the other buckets work very similarly. But you're asking the right question. The key is there is so much resource going in to the same solution that if it's not coordinated, I'm not sure we're going to get the work done. Therefore, Dr. Chow at HCA, Antran now at SSA, and myself are now meeting quite routinely and going to start coordinating a lot closer, and certainly with what Doug is doing as well on the county side. So we can't do this in a silo. You know, I'm permanent CEO since March. I've already got a strategic plan that's been pulled up in the priorities, and we're going to start putting that plan together. But we are not going to do it in a silo, because I'm looking at the magnitude of resources, and I think we need to be better organized, to be quite honest.
Thank you. Dr. Fofley.
Well, I was going to ask a question, but Michael, you answered it, which was, I was going to ask Katie, by the way, thank you for the presentation, very well done. If we were eligible for $83 million, that means that there was, I guess, $830 million available, but it actually was $1.3 billion. So it's $1.3 billion, and then it begs the question, why would the state allocate those monies through an incentive plan to managed care plans when the issue is homelessness, housing and homelessness? And the answer to that question is because of the social determinants. So the state is now getting serious about the social determinants of health, and one of them, and a really big one, is housing and homelessness. And so that's the answer. So now my question, what percentage do you think, Katie and CalOptima Health members, what percentage of the homeless in Orange County do you think are CalOptima members or are eligible to be CalOptima members? What percentage do you?
Yeah, virtually 100%.
100%.
If you're on the street and you don't have resources, okay. I don't think you're making $38,000 a year as a family of four. Mm-hmm. And if you're an individual, I don't know that you're making $18,000. It's possible. You're living in your car and you've got a job at $20 an hour. So when we look at homelessness at this point, our contention is, for the most part, those are our members. Based on the most recent coroner report on the mortalities on the street of homeless, we've even identified who of those that have passed are our members. So it is a high, high percentage. It may not be perfectly 100, but I would say it's 90 and above for sure. There's no doubt that that's our population. And SSA, obviously, we have to work closely with on that, with data and information.
And thus for me, the allocation of a tremendous pool of funds, $1.3 billion, for housing and homelessness directed towards managed health care plans, which are addressing social determinants of health as critical elements, not just this piece, but many of the pieces that are necessary and vitally important, including mental health, and I would be remiss if I didn't bring that up and into this picture. So it's a different approach and a different direction, and I think it's going to be important for us as the Homelessness Commission to understand and partner with CalOptima and many, many yeah. others, because it does speak to what Todd just mentioned earlier, which is how does this all get coordinated? And so it's seeming that there's some opportunity here for really making that happen in the ways that Doug pointed out earlier. So.
Any more questions?
I would just ask, I don't know if it's a directive or what, sorry, it just mentioned, didn't you? I think staff plays a very, very important role. I think you all play a very important role to at least advise us when we meet and give us kind of a standing update of what, I mean, I love the fact that the CEO of CalOptima, social services, our health carriers, that all of our top executives, right, are meeting to make sure that you're trickling down and giving directives to your staff about how this has to happen as the department heads. But the worst thing and the thing I just hate about government, having been doing this over 30 years now, is finding out after the fact that all these people have this money and people were spending it and then we didn't get much bang for our buck because we never brought it together to figure out how we could leverage each other. And especially in the world of government when you have all these constraints, and I'm really glad you brought that up. If you can leverage dollars you have for healthcare or social services that maybe don't have as many strings, I know it does, I'm not saying it doesn't, but that allows them to use their money a certain way, I guess what I'm asking is, can staff help at least keep us apprised of the conversations that are occurring? So everybody knows we're doing the best we can right now. Early stage, you're only there since March. And social services just got appointed, I think, a week ago or 10 days ago, to try to coordinate. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I feel if I'd be remiss if we didn't have it kind of as a placeholder. So you are always reminded to explain to us at some point in our meeting what the latest greatest is in terms of the moving the pieces of the gears and the machine. Because I think Orange County has always had a reputation of doing things better than the rest of the state. And I think we have a real amazing opportunity since we have Cal Optum and most counties don't, because we do our own managed health care, to figure out how to coordinate. I would just appreciate, Mr. Chairman, if we could figure out, maybe staff could talk to you about it and see if you and Supervisor Wagner agree that we could just keep this on our radar.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Any more questions? Thank you for your excellent presentation.
Okay, if I get up now?
I have 10 more questions.
All right. Perfectly by saying, why is a health plan you're talking about housing? And that is exactly what I'm talking about today, because housing is health. And that is exactly what Medi-Cal has finally recognized, is that in order for us to take care of our most vulnerable, we have to ensure that their social determinants of health are indeed addressed. And those are things like housing, access to healthy foods and vegetables, green space. They're 80% actually of a person's ability to be healthy. And so Medi-Cal is finally recognizing that, and that is why we have a program that I'm here to talk to you about today, which is called CalAIM. So I'm going to spend just a few minutes giving you a high overview of what CalAIM is and the services that encompass that, and then I'm also going to share with you some information about a new project that we have going on at Cal Optima Health. So as I just said, CalAIM is a program of Medi-Cal that recognizes that the social determinants of health should be at the center of every individual's care. And they have, and the goal of that is for care to go beyond hospitals. There are two components of CalAIM. The first one is enhanced case management, and the second one is community supports, which I'll share a little bit about with you today. There are actually 14 community supports that Medi-Cal is offering, but every health plan does not have to offer all 14. I'm very proud and excited to share that Cal Optima is one of the few health plans that is actually offering all 14 of those programs. We also recognize that our ability to provide those services is really predicated on the community providers in Orange County. And so because of that, you're going to see a lot of investment from Cal Optima Health into those providers in the community. So we've added things like community support liaisons and supports to those providers so that we can help them along the way. Oftentimes for community support providers, like the Salvation Army, working with a health plan can be scary, right? It can be daunting. We can seem like a big, bad, health plan. And so our role and our job is to work in conjunction with those programs and to make that not scary, and that's what we're seeing us do. So let's go over what those programs are. The first is enhanced case management, and talking a little bit about coordination, that's what enhanced case management is. Is it the ability for our members to have just one care manager? So instead of having this program handle this part of their care, this program handle that part, this program handle housing, it's having one master care manager that manages everything. Because again, as we've just mentioned, it's all connected. There are 14 services, as I said, that go into CalAIM, and I'm going to just very briefly touch on them. These first ones are what we launched in January of 2022, 8 months ago, and these all have to do with our unhoused population. And the first one is recuperative care, which I'm sure most, if not all, of you are familiar with, which is a program for unhoused that are leaving the recuperate. This is a benefit now of Medi-Cal. One thing that Cal Optima Health has done that is unique is we have done presumptive eligibility for our members in hospitals, which means that every single individual that's unhoused, that's at the hospital, is automatically eligible for this benefit for 14 days coming right out of the hospital. To my knowledge, we're the only health plan that has done that across the state, and that allows us to ensure that our members can immediately go to recuperative care and don't have to wait for us to say they're eligible. Other services that go for unhoused are navigation services, which are intended to help folks find housing at the beginning of their housing journey. Housing deposits is something that we also have now. That is actually a $5,000 one-time benefit that we now offer folks that are unhoused to help pay for first and last month's rent, housing deposits, getting the electricity on, purchasing a refrigerator if they need that, all the things that may be missing that they need to get them into that housing. And then housing sustainability services come after that, and that is to ensure that they remain housed once they get there. We need to ensure that they're getting along with the landlord, that they're paying the bills, that the life services and the life skills that they need are continuing. Just a few short weeks ago, we launched these additional community supports, some of which have to do with the unhoused and some don't. Short-term post-hospitalization housing is intended to follow recuperative care. So if unhoused folks, after spending 90 days in recuperative care, need a little bit more time before they find housing, short-term post-hospitalization can provide that time. Day rehabilitation programs help them with the skills necessary to remain housed. And personal care and homemaker services are intended for our folks that are on in-home supportive services that may need some additional hours in that program, or to bridge them until that in-home supportive services benefit is actually approved. Medically tailored meals is also another benefit that is now covered under Cal Aim. We know that food is medicine. We know this. And so Medi-Cal is now covering that. So anybody who has a diagnosis that would make them eligible could either get medically tailored meals that are already prepared, they can just pop in the oven or the microwave, or it could actually be one of those cool fancy boxes that some of us have received that have the food in it with the recipes. Either can take place. And then finally, we launched in July 1st our Sober Retirement Program. Rounding out the 14 services we will be launching in January 1st of next year, which one of them is respite services, which is intended for folks who are caring for somebody who needs assistance during the day. It's intended for the caregiver, so they can get away, get that break, and someone can care for their loved one. Environmental accessibility adaptations are just that. It's money that a person can be eligible for that will help them adapt their home, and that's a $7,500 benefit. The middle column has to do with transition services. This is our attempt, or Medi-Cal's attempt, to ensure that every individual is really being institutionalized at the lowest level possible. So can that person in a nursing home go to an assisted living? Can that person in assisted living actually go home? And these are transition services. And then finally, asthma remediation services, which will help folks that are dealing with asthma get the equipment that they need to manage their asthma.
Is your sobering center our sobering center? Is it Be Well or is it
right.
A different? Okay, you're supporting Be Well.
So, I want to make sure. So, Cal Aim is advancing innovations in Medi-Cal, and as of January 1st now, the health plans across the state, the Medicaid plans now, are now eligible to provide these services, and now sobering center is a covered service through Cal Aim, now being managed as a community support by Cal Optima Health. And so we will contract to community providers to provide the sobering center services. The first contract extended is to Be Well to provide sobering center services at the Anita campus.
Okay, so this is pretty important to me because South County has a lot of homeless who are publicly intoxicated under the influence. I get this complaint same from me all the time. Right now we have a plan in the North Park to take them to Be Well. They don't end up in the jail. I don't have to file charges on them. it's a lot of nonsense resources. I don't want to utilize, sheriff doesn't want to utilize, PD doesn't want to utilize. If you now have a revenue source for sobering, why can't we pitch that for South County? You don't have to build a whole B-well, but I know they're talking about the Great Park play, but that's, you know, time away. I'm talking about right now, why can't we get a place that we, that sheriff's department, those are all contract cities down there, why can't we immediately, since you now have money, establish a South County sobering center so we can take those people off the street, try to get them detoxed, and start to really deal with that homeless population. In South County, we don't need a shelter, but we, you can find providers who can give us a sobering center.
The answer is we can. The answer is we've already been approached by one of the other cities that's setting up a center that they would like to have sobering center services in, and we're happy to have that discussion. So we're ready for that. This is just launching. We've only issued the very first contract effective July 1st, so we're basically 30 days in, and that will be established. So we are prepared now to move forward with that. So the answer is yes.
But can, okay, you said one city. Is there a way, I don't want to like exponentially grow your funding and your program, although I don't have any problem trying to do that. But I'm, what I'm saying is, can we scale this? Like, can we have a conversation with the sheriff's department immediately? Can we talk to the city managers about getting that in and of itself? A South County Sobering Center could really help with our homeless population in South County.
And this is just brand new to Cal Optima and just brand new to the state. And the answer to this is I'd be happy to sit down and have that coordination conversation. Not a problem.
Great. Mr. Chairman, can I speak?
You know, piggybacking off the district attorney's comments, we're at the infancy of a concept care court, working with central court, working with our alternative kind of jail program, and looking at resources at how we might look at options from away from incarceration and prosecution and what have you. And so if we could tap in, you know, in Anaheim and then the North Spa, the North part of the county, as alternatives to what I think the DA is talking about, that would be great too, because we're at the infancy of that and resources would be welcomed.
Yeah, I know if Marshall Moncrief were here from BeWell, he could certainly speak to the coordination with law enforcement and certain that with the sheriff's department is going to be critical go forward. So we are more than happy to start entertaining these conversations. It's just kicking off. And I think another reason I think we were invited to be a part of the meeting today, because it's not just about the homeless, it's about others that are in need in the community. And again, even as part of Sobering Center Services, we're going to work really closely with the healthcare agency and the social service agency, because these individuals are going to need other wraparound, will be eligible for other services. And I think, again, going to the coordination of this and figuring out, okay, strategically, where do you want to have your drop-offs and your locations for sobering? Where does that make sense? And then resourcing it appropriately. Again, you have to scale up those clinical providers to be able to do that. I wish there was a plethora of those providers, but there aren't. And so we have to scale accordingly. But a worthy discussion, and that we can talk after the meeting.
And I just want to emphasize that, you know, this is really, you know, focused on wraparound services and care and not trying to incarcerate. I mean, that's not where we're going with this. It's just, you know, chronic nuisance, chronic, you know, criminal activity and other issues that kind of are associated with. But again, emphasis on care, not enforcement.
And that's where I think from a Cal Optima Health standpoint, we've added the name health for a very specific reason. This goes to the health of the community and these individuals. I started out my career as an intake director for drug and alcohol. I can tell you the weak crystal meth hit the streets of San Diego back in the day. So this is an issue, and I think looking at it from a district attorney lens and certainly a city manager and certainly the city of the South of Anaheim, a big deal. So, yes, we'd love to entertain these conversations.
Thank you.
The project open for the support we can next month. And Chief Dunhier, at some point I want him to give us an update on that and how that is to work. But that is to work as with social service people out in the community, particularly with the homeless individuals, and to provide services to them, not just immediately, but on into where they can have continuing. think it's very timely that this is coming together. And that also ties into the county's OSU care that we're doing. Sorry, please go ahead.
I wanted to chime in. We talked two or three times today about the importance of permanent supportive housing, and everything can't be navigation centers because we want to get people moved out into other facilities. So to your point about coordination with this, the other, you know, we've got our housing trust agency. We're all trying to figure out how some of that money can flow into permanent supportive housing units. And it seems like a perfect coordination effort with some of the what we're talking about here on your housing support services here, how that might connect in with some of the permanent supportive housing things that we're trying to do to keep people moved into that so we can keep that flow going.
That is actually a very good segue into the last thing. If it's okay, if we take a couple more seconds to talk about another special project that CalOptima Health is currently developing. As I'm sure most of you know, the fastest growing unhoused population is older adults, 50 and over. Research calls it the silver tsunami, and it is the baby boomers that are coming up, most of which are experiencing homelessness for the first time after the age of 50. Another interesting fact about this population is when you live on the street, or you live rough, as they call it, you age at about 20 years faster than those of us that are housed, which means that many of these folks are dealing with or need help with at least one activity of daily living while they're living on the street. Those of us that have worked in recuperative care know that in order to be eligible for recuperative care, you need to be independent in those activities of daily living. So we have this population that's growing, the fastest growing population living on the street, that doesn't need a nursing home, but they can't go into recuperative care. And so where do they go? So CalOptima Health is very excited to be developing a project specifically for older adults, a recuperative care program that will be coupled with a PACE model that will allow these folks that are unhoused, that are over the age of 50, to receive services here, a building that we're looking at in Tustin to do this, that would also be coordinated with a PACE model so that we could provide the services they need with those activities of daily living. Interesting, like what you were talking about a little bit earlier, is that folks that are coming to this building would be able to remain there until they are permanently housed, which means they would stay with us until we could do a warm handoff with a permanent housing option for them. This would be the first program like this in the state, if not the country, because as we know it now, PACE is not a program that is generally offered or eligible for the unhoused. So CalOptima will be making the effort to do that and changing that legislation, because to date, this population is almost discriminated against, if you will, and not able to take part in that program. So we're very excited about this. This fits and answers a piece of the continuum that exists that is only going to get larger, and we don't have an answer to yet.
Thank you. Do we have questions? Thank you for your presentation and a lot of hopeful, tremendous things on the list. Appreciate the good work you're doing and the difference you're making in your time. All right. Concludes our presentation. We now go on to public comment.
Chairman, we do have one request to speak under general public comments. So that would be Father Dennis Chris.
First, actually, CalOptima, this, some of what you've said is actually very interesting, and you know that some of this may touch you. Okay, I'm here on behalf of two populations that I have personal experience with during this past year. There are, by the PIT count, there were 94 unsheltered homeless families, comprising 251 people and 121 children. Stay with that number. 121 children, unsheltered. There are also 300 unsheltered seniors. I have two asks for you. the easiest one, and perhaps Cal Optima could do a large part of this, is give hotel vouchers to these people immediately. Okay, you may have to declare a limited emergency to do this, but do it. Because otherwise, you're condemning over 121 kids to remain on the streets, basically, you know, for a large amount of time. If you can't do that, then immediately or in the next couple of weeks, identify at least where these people can park. There is no place in this county that you can legally park and sleep. Identify those places and then allow, at least give them that dignity. A lot of these families are in cars. I've had to deal with these folks. And, if in the end I don't, I'll start taking them to your places. Mr. Chafee's in my town, so I don't want to pick on him directly. But I'll start doing it. I'll take these people to you. We've had to deal with six families like this. I've been texting between here during this conversation about one family of trying to figure out where they're going to go. Yes, they're problematic sometimes. They are. The one that I'm dealing with is currently problematic. Okay, if need be, and we brought this up, Doug knows this conversation. If the parents are incapable of taking, take their kids at least. Put them in foster care. I mean, do something, because if we don't, we have this amount of people. Now, what would that entail? To put a person, even a senior, if you did nothing for them, at all, except for putting them in a hotel, that's $36,000.
And your time is up, sir.
$36,000. Dialysis is $90,000. So what you're talking about is raising Cal Optima's price, number of dialysis patients by about 133 people, and you would be able to put a roof over the head of all those unhoused families and all those unhoused seniors. Please do something.
Thank you.
And Chairman, we have no other requests from the public to speak.
Then we'll move on to commissioner comments. Well, thank all of you for asking some great questions. And I think we can see the too many different ideas are coming and not coordinating. And money seems to have purposes tied to it and not necessarily where it's needed. So,
Mr. Chair, if I may, just reporting from the North Spa, I circled back with my colleagues in Buena Park and Placentia. And they're having trouble accessing their SB2 funds for the ongoing operations of the Buena Park and the Placentia shelters. So, to the extent that any of you have any ideas or assistance you could provide to our North County friends to help with that SB2 securing the funds, that would be greatly appreciated. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, can we chat about that? Yeah. I need to know how the funding flows in the first place.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Apparently it stops. See if we can make that work and do what I can to help with that. All right, I appreciate your attendance today. Our next meeting is Wednesday, October 19 at 1 p.m. Probably be right here, although it may be in our other new building. I'm not sure. But we'll let you all know. So, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. Oh, my pleasure.
May still be hot. Infrastructure, business models, not around, just around,
Internally would agree with social determinants and all of that, but it goes contrary to them.
Yep.
Yes. And especially the advocacy, and especially on the side of that, which aren't able to turn philosophically because they have shareholders that invested in
right.
In
that would be a really good.